Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big money
at Menards. Welcome in to Slapshot Radio on Nashville's best sports talk, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on the Game Nashville app. It is week 5 of quarantine, and you know what? We're still talking hockey. It doesn't matter if there hasn't been a game in 5 weeks. You know what? We're still going to talk it here on Slapshot Radio. And tonight, we have the man himself, the voice of the Nashville Predators, Pete Weber, joining us. And we've got him for the entire hour. It's all brought to you by Day One sponsor, Hermitage Family and Cosmetic Dentistry. Carter Church from Weikart Realtors, the Andrews Group, your real estate expert in Murfreesboro and Nolensville. And the latest additions to the Slapshot Radio family of advertisers, the largest wine and spirits store in Middle Tennessee, Cool Springs Wines and Spirits, featuring curbside delivery, and our friends at Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries Nashville, with 3 locally owned and operated locations in Middle Tennessee. Shop online at lazyboy.com. I'm Paul McCann, and of course our co-host, former NHL coach and player, Brent Peterson. Coach, how are you this evening?
Doing great. How are you guys doing? Good
to hear you again. Yeah, doing good. We're staying healthy, staying safe, staying 6 foot apart. And, of course, the host of the Preds Watch Parties, a guy you're seeing all over social media lately. And I don't know, I think he may have the record for the most potent drink put together on the Preds Happy Hour from a couple of days ago, Zach McCann. Zach.
Still shaking that one off, that's for sure, but happy to be here.
Yeah, I don't know about that one, man. There was a lot in that one.
Go big or go home.
Exactly. And joining us, I mean, for the entire hour, I mean, after all, you know, Claudia's just saying, gosh, she's got to have something to do. Joining us back on Slapshot Radio, we are so happy to welcome him back, the co-host of this show for 8 seasons, and the voice of the Nashville Predators, the one and only Bubba himself, Pete Weber. Pete, welcome back, my friend.
Well, thank you so very much. We appreciate that. And very glad to be with you here tonight. This is, had to punch one of those buttons back up again. Glad to be back with you here this evening. And this is a tough night, I know, for Brent Peterson with his background with the old Hartford Whalers, because this is the anniversary of their last game ever in Hartford back in 1997.
Only Pete Weber would know that, Coach. Only Pete Weber would know that.
Well, it's true. That was the last game, but they kicked me out of there a year before that, so I didn't get to play in the last game.
So he really didn't care about that one.
They got rid of me early in life.
So, Pete, what are you doing to keep yourself busy while you're sitting there in your palatial estate located somewhere in an unknown location in South Nashville?
Well, I'm doing an awful lot of shows. I mean, podcasts, live shows, and trying to keep Crispy on the straight and narrow when I can. Terry, by the way, for those of you who follow the 31 Thoughts podcast, will be recording an episode of that tomorrow with Jeff Merrick and Elliot Friedman. So I know he's looking forward to that. He kept asking, what do they want me for? They're running out of old guys to talk to? I said, no, Terry. They want your stories. And as we know, he has more than can fill a segment of that show.
We know that very, very well, Peter, as I think Terry still owns the most politically incorrect segment that Slapshot Radio ever hosted with him and former Flyer teammate Bobby Taylor about 10 years ago.
Put that back out on the internet, you know?
You know, I should actually pull that one out. That's because I still have that one. I still have the recording of that one. So Zach is over here looking like I have a question I need to ask. So, Zach, come up with one quick.
Well, I mean, obviously, it's fun to have, you know, the professor right here on Slapshot Radio. And I guess, Pete, my question for you would be, what has it been like teaching a generation hockey, because for all intents and purposes, you are one of the stewards who brought hockey to Nashville. I certainly remember growing up and learning the game to the sounds of Pete and Terry. What is it like to kind of have that legacy already set in stone?
It's a little overwhelming. And let's not talk about anything else set in stone right now. We could wait a number of years, if not eons, on all of that. But actually, it's very nice to hear. And I hope that we did a good job of getting you indoctrinated into the game and to the point where you truly love it as much as we do.
Well, and that's part of what, Pete, you definitely brought to Nashville. I have often compared you with the gentleman that actually taught, you know, I consider that taught me the game, you know, over the air in Philadelphia, the late great Hockey Hall of Famer Gene Hart. So, you know, him and Don Earl taught us. Pete and Terry taught Nashville. But Pete, I'm kind of curious. I mean, I know you were a huge baseball fan and had dreams of being a big league ball player growing up. But what brought you to hockey?
Love of the action. And I'll tell you, two announcers really pulled me toward it. And that would be, first of all, Lloyd Pettit, longtime voice of the Blackhawks. And boy, what a blessing it was when I came here to Nashville. And who owned the Milwaukee Admirals then but Lloyd Pettit? So I got to spend some time with him at a few training camps. And then after the second year, or beginning with the second year in St. Louis, it was Jack Buck giving way to Dan Kelly, who we all lost way too early. I believe he was 52 when he passed away. Mm-hmm. His son is carrying on his television voice of the Blues right now, John Kelly. But Dan Kelly, when you get most of the video highlights from the 70s and the 80s, most of them are narrated by Dan Kelly. And I think you can hear, I mean, I took the Predators outro, commercial outro, in our early years here straight from Dan Kelly. He did, very simply, because he had some simulcast issues, too, and he would just simply say, this is St. Louis
Blues hockey. So I would say, this is Nashville Predators hockey, because I didn't think this is St. Louis Blues hockey would work particularly well here.
Yeah, I think people would have gotten a little upset about that. No, but when you think about that, though, Pete, as you began your career, I mean, you know, you ended up in what I think that a lot of folks would probably consider one of your second homes, and that would be in Buffalo, New York. Whatever brought you to Buffalo?
Number one, my dad's army buddy, who then became my godfather, was working in Buffalo, New York, and he had worked in my dad's home
in Illinois until shortly after I was born, and then got hired away by International Chimney Corporation in Buffalo. Henry Lieber was there, and then all of a sudden an ad came up in Broadcasting Magazine, before it was Broadcasting on cable, and they were opening up a new all-news outlet in Buffalo on the radio. So I applied for that, and I lived with my godfather and his family for several months before we got our own place there. So each of my moves, in many ways, minus the one to Los Angeles, all came up with some sort of familial connection. And I think they worked out very well for me.
No question about that. We are on the line with the voice of the Nashville Predators. Joining us for the entire hour, Pete Weber. Brent, how about you ask a question of your old radio partner there?
Yeah, radio partner, good to hear your voice again. And I just wanted to know if there's any one specific thing that you and Terry did that was just hilarious, or that were the best moments? What was the best moment you ever had as a Predator broadcaster?
It might have actually been one that didn't hit the air, Brent.
What's that?
The April Fool's night of the first season. Okay. We're doing our on-camera to start the show. And we had always, under John Guayano, when he was the director of broadcasting here, had always done them live. So April Fool's is coming up, and John thinks, let's pull something over on Crispy and accelerate our clock a little bit, because he's not paying any attention to a watch or anything, and act like we're doing the open, but then mess it up a little bit. So the deal was, okay, as we're coming right up to that open, we'd already rehearsed. I'm going to do it about 5 minutes early. And after I start counting down five, four, you start acting like you're getting sick and can't do the open, because I'd always handled the opening comments and, like, try to walk off camera. So I did. The Philadelphia Flyers were in town. If you could see the video, Terry was reaching out, trying to grab me by my belt loop and pull me back in, even though I was pretending to be coughing to death. I looked like someone who had just escaped from a smoking cancer ward or clinic. And so Terry had to open. He turned around. His eyes got so big. And he goes, "Well, the Philadelphia Flyers are here in town tonight, and they have a whole bunch of injuries." They had a bigger injury later that night when Eric Lindros got beat up by a local at a working establishment and was hospitalized for a while. But so I don't know if that was a premonition of that or not.
But then the camera and everybody started cracking up, and he realized he had been had.
But the look on his face was absolutely incredible.
Oh, cool.
Well, that's annals.
Hey, Petey, that's pretty tame, because everything that Crispy ever did was X-rated. You can't even tell us tonight about all the things he did.
Oh, no. You're right. Absolutely not. I can't. This is still a family show,
right? Yeah, it's still a family show. So we do have those pesky little FCC regulations that we have to live by. So I was wondering where you were going to go with that one, Pete. And you definitely picked the most family friendly version of that, and I thank you for that. I really do, Pete. I can still tell that you still care about the show, and that's good. And you know what? We've already up against our first break, and Pete, just for old time's sake, you might need to just lean back in your chair. There he is. He's got his mouth open. He's ready to go. Yes, indeed, because we're going to talk about our good friends over at Hermitage Family and Cosmetic Dentistry. Now, look, you know, in the times that we're in right now, the safety of everyone is absolutely paramount. So at present, the Hermitage Family and Cosmetic Dentistry is not open right now, but they are making sure that they're going to be ready for you when things open back up. I'm telling you, they're a great group. Doctors Bacon and Doctors Bacon and Kruger are just phenomenal people. They will take good care of you and your dental health. So make sure you keep them in mind. You can call them for an appointment when they open back up at 615-872-7762. That's 615-872-7762. Hermitage Family and Cosmetic Dentistry. We brighten smiles. It's Slapshot Radio on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Paul McCann, Brent Peterson, Zach McCann coming at you with the voice of your Nashville Predators. Pete Weber with us the entire hour. Pete, so in Buffalo, you're working at being a jack of all trades at a radio station there. Eventually moving up to be the sports director, and this is in your mid-20s, right?
I moved there when I was 25. Yeah, I was 25 years of age.
So you're in Buffalo, and you're doing college hockey. You're doing things like that, and I have to admit, I mean, going after an NHL job at that point, and then turning around and getting it at the age of 27 with the Los Angeles Kings. What was that like?
I could be really stupid here and tell you I don't know what it would not have been like, but it was I tell you, just because of the way we worked things out there, I drove across the country to Los Angeles from Buffalo, so that gave me a lot of time to think. I was thinking, well, this could make or break me right here, right now. I could totally fall off the face of the earth, and it wouldn't have been impossible, because I knew at that point in time I was going to work at the Forum, where Jack Kent Cook held forth. He was the founder of the Kings, the owner of the Lakers, the guy who decided to build the Forum rather than playing in the sports arena. And he already had chewed up Al Michaels and spit him out when Chick Curran decided he didn't really want to have a color man. So I knew that it was going to be a challenge, but I also knew, and I had in my files, the memos that he had sent to Chick Curran, who was the director of broadcasting, and to Bob Miller, who would be my partner and still a lifelong friend. He seems like a fine young man. Hire him immediately. So I knew I'd at least impressed him correctly. And then the idea was to try and keep it going and expand upon that. And fortunately enough, I was able to do precisely that.
Learning at the knee or at the as a partner from just an incredible broadcaster in Bob Miller. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, he taught me how to be a professional announcer. He taught me how to prepare. He also taught me that, thankfully, I found out very early, we're not doing brain surgery. So, like Jethro Bodine, who wanted to be a brain surgeon there for a while, the Beverly Hillbillies, I knew that this was supposed to be fun not just for ourselves, the broadcasters, but for the audience as well. And with that in mind, things went along just absolutely great. And I got that reinforced as well from Chick Hearn, who was a great shoulder to lean on, as well as Bob.
But really, I mean, I've gotten to meet Bob a couple of times, and I don't think there's a nicer person in the in the broadcast industry than Bob Miller. We're on the line with Pete Weber, the voice of the Nashville Predators, on Slapshot Radio. Zach?
Now, obviously, when you look at doing play-by-play for multitudes of different sports, what was it like transitioning from doing several different sports and being a sports director, in Buffalo, to doing the NHL? Was there kind of an adjustment period? How did you take to doing professional hockey after covering so many different sports?
It was, the first sport I got to do play-by-play on commercially was hockey, college hockey in South Bend. Then college hockey in Buffalo. And so I was accustomed to that. Actually, the biggest transition for me going to Los Angeles was going from doing hockey play-by-play to doing the color on the hockey broadcast, thankfully with a great play-by-play man. And then all these transitions, Zach, work in. Then it was basketball, the Seattle Supersonics. Then it was going back to Buffalo and doing the sideline work and being the color commentator and host for Buffalo Bills football. Then AAA baseball came back in 1985 and latching on and doing those every day across the summers and the springs. People claim there's no spring in Buffalo. No. There definitely is a spring. If not, I never would have gotten here. And going back from Buffalo Bisons baseball, there was an opening all of a sudden for the Sabres on radio, and I moved in and applied for that and luckily enough got it and was doing that for a couple of years before we moved here and got the Predators established. So any number of transitions there, and I think the biggest one is just to get accustomed to the tempo of each of the games. Basketball sometimes approaches hockey. What approaches hockey perhaps the best was those times I got to do indoor lacrosse, and that tempo is right up there with what the NHL has become since the lockout that cost us the 2004-2005 season and the hurry-up style of play that's since come into the NHL.
We're on the line with Pete Weber. Hey, Coach, how about a question for the voice of the Predators?
Yeah, Pete, I was wondering how you enjoyed doing the soccer year. You talked about all the other sports you did. How did you enjoy doing the soccer game?
It was fun to do, but I got to tell you, last summer, and the summer before, I filled in some for Nashville SC during their USL days. And last year, I had two games, both of which ended, as they say in soccer, 0-0. So not exactly the same sort of rush that I get from doing the NHL. And I think in the first of those 0-0 games, it was one done from the television studio of Fox 17, and taking the feed in there from Indianapolis. And that 0-0 game featured, I believe, four or five shots on goal total. So you being a hockey coach, Brent, you're going, that wasn't too many chances. But I got to say, you're absolutely right if you say that.
It's interesting, Pete, though, because when you look at not only the breadth of what you've done over your career, but you look at some of the great names in broadcasting that you've had pretty close relationships with. I mean, when you look at a Bob Miller, and the other name that sticks out is obviously the legendary Rick Jenrette. And you've got some great stories about Rick Jenrette. But what was it like working with him? He is an interesting personality of the game.
To be certain, he is that. And you know what he's called in Buffalo by many is Rodney, because of his great resemblance to Rodney Dangerfield.
I know, respect.
And there's a lot of him there. And he just announced, I don't know if you caught it or not, but he's going to come back for if there is a remainder of this year and for next with the Sabres, so he doesn't do a full schedule. But this is a guy who for many years did the Sabres at night and then in the morning would do the wake-up show on CJRN in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Very, very close to Buffalo, so don't worry about driving for Rick. But I don't know how in the heck that man is still alive at this point to have survived doing that for well over 20 years. As a matter of fact, when I was sports director at WGR in Buffalo, we signed into his first contract to do the Sabres where he no longer had to do that morning show. Maybe I have prolonged Rick's life. I don't know.
Yeah, well, hopefully, if he didn't have to get his butt up in the at 4 o'clock in the morning to be able to do a wake-up show, that's for darn sure. On the line with Pete Weber, the voice of the Nashville Predators right here on Slapshot Radio on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Zach?
Now, you mentioned earlier that you kind of bounced around between doing play-by-play and color commentary. For some of our listeners who might not be as familiar with the broadcasting dynamic, talk a little bit about what it's like to go between those two roles and what the distinct differences are between the two.
Well, I think the color commentator, Zach, has to answer how and why. The play-by-play guy has to go who and where. And that's the major difference there. Unfortunately, I only did the color, really, for the three seasons working with Bob Miller at the Forum in Los Angeles and of course, on the road. And I realized by that time, I'm not quite as dumb as I look. And I realized that most of the guys doing color commentary were seeming to be the ex-athlete. So I didn't think there were many places for me to go after that. That's why Chick Hearn encouraged me when there came an opening for the Seattle Supersonics television to go take it, and he recommended me. And I went there with that idea, knowing that to last as long as I wanted to in the business, or at least have a chance of lasting that long, I was going to have to transition back to doing the play-by-play I had done in the first place. So the descriptions, as Vin Scully tells it, you take the full palette of colors and the blank canvas, and it's all you. And that's the beauty of it on radio.
You know, I want to dig in a little bit more talking about your time in Los Angeles because, quite frankly, you worked with and got to know and be around some of the most legendary voices of individual games, not only Bob Miller, but Chick Hearn with the Los Angeles Lakers. But, you know, Vin Scully, longtime voice of the Los Angeles Dodgers. I mean, that had to be an interesting rush because these were legendary names when you started with them that whose legend only grew.
Yeah, and then don't forget, just down the throughway a little bit, in Anaheim was Dick Enberg.
Oh, that's right.
Who some of you know as host of Sports Challenge, which comes up every now and then on the ESPN Classic. But he was three voices, major. He was voice of the UCLA Bruins under John Wooden.
Yep.
He was voice of the Los Angeles/California/Anaheim Angels. And he was a guy who did a beautiful job on the Los Angeles Rams as well. He was followed up by a guy who was one of the best, most versatile broadcasters I ever heard. And I actually had grown up watching him on television in Peoria, Illinois. Bob Starr, who worked for a while in St. Louis, was voice of the original Boston Patriots. And later on did the Rams and the Angels as well. And he was a tremendous influence on me also.
Well, Pete, we're halfway through, and we're just about halfway through your career a little bit as we look at what brought you here to Nashville.
Thank you, Ralph Edwards.
Yeah, exactly. No, I was wondering if the This Is Your Life thing needed to come out. We need to have the big book, all that kind of good stuff, the voices in the background. You know, we may do that again. Who knows? But we'll be right back with the voice of the Predators, Pete Weber, right here on Slapshot Radio on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Don't know much about history.
Whoa. Max going deep, pulling out the Sam Cooke. You gotta love that. Slapshot Radio at ESPN 102.5, The Game. I heard the chuckle there, Pete. I heard the chuckle.
We're going through the line at Faber College right now. We're going to go pick up what we want for our lunch.
Only Pete immediately would go to Animal House. I love that. So
see, you can guess what I am right there. Is it? Get it?
So, Pete, you know, it is funny when you know, we've talked about, you know, your career up to the point where it's the late 1990s and they're talking about expanding the National Hockey League. What gave you the idea of saying, hey, I think I'll go after that Nashville job?
Well, we talked about family ties before, right?
Yep.
And it's not so much because I was particularly enamored of any of the actors or actresses in that show. But Claudia's parents had relocated from the Columbus, Ohio area to East Tennessee quite a few years before even the rumor of a Predators franchise, and nameless, of course, at that time, began. But in late spring of 97, I'm upstairs in my office at home and reading the Prodigy computer service because nobody else picked up the telephone line downstairs on those great dial-up modems. And I read, hey, the NHL is provisionally awarding franchises to Minneapolis, St. Paul, to Columbus, Ohio, to Atlanta, Georgia, and Nashville, Tennessee to come up, get started the following year. And I said, hey, Claudia, this would make things a little bit easier for those family get-togethers in Knoxville, wouldn't it? She said, yes. So I continued my pursuit of finding where Craig Leopold was located, got an address for him in Racine, Wisconsin, and within 24 hours had my stuff FedExed up to him and then just began following up. And that's in 97. And keep in mind, this franchise was not going to get started until 1998. Mm-hmm. So it was sort of like a year-plus campaign.
And obviously a successful one. Talk about the first year, maybe even the first month of this franchise, because, you know, everyone always goes, well, it's Pete and Terry, and it's been Pete and Terry forever. Well, actually, it was Pete and Mike with Terry occasionally in year one.
Yeah, Terry. So it was Terry's deal was to join for every telecast. And I think we had 45 that first year, 30 on what was then known as Fox Sports Net, and 15 on what is now known as CW58.
Yep.
And that caused different situations there. So Mike Greenlay was hired to join me on the radio broadcasts. He cobbled together a pretty interesting portfolio for himself, too. He was doing the International Hockey League's Detroit Vipers, working with the guy who now is the television voice of the Anaheim Ducks, Johnny Ahlers, and then doing a CCHA game of the week, too, when those things would fit together for him. So then it turned out to Terry, if we were on a road trip and say two of the three or four games were being televised, he would decide to just stay with and then do those other games on radio.
Mm-hmm.
And then that worked out better for Mike Greenlay, too, as it turned out. Mike now with the Minnesota Wild broadcast team and had spent some time with the Anaheim Ducks as well. But, yeah, that first year was it was like, stay tuned. If it's not television, we'll find out who's working with Pete that particular night.
We're on the line with the voice of the Nashville Predators, Pete Weber. Coach, you got a question for Pete.
Yeah, Petey, I just I remember those days back in the first years and so that we played, and I'd be sitting with you on the bus. We always go early to the games. And is there any one place that you really like going to in the league, or is there are all there's so many now compared to we used to have 16 when I played, so that was a long time ago.
Yeah,
I just wondering if there's one place that you one building you really like to be at.
I'll tell you the building where I feel most comfortable working is Staples Center in Los Angeles. Because we're not all the way upstairs. We're about maybe two-thirds of the way up. We jut out more toward the ice than you normally do. And another place that is turning to be one of my favorites, but we don't go there so much anymore, is the new Little Caesars Arena in Detroit. Because there we hang almost
right over the boards, nice up and high, and can see virtually everything also. So those are two of my favorite places to work, and I know they probably couldn't be any more diverse than that, but fun places to go. And if you're going to ask me where I don't want to go, where I hate broadcasting from, I'll tell you right out. It's Edmonton. It's got to be the worst broadcast location. Actually, it's not Edmonton. I think I do the games there from Spruce Grove, Alberta.
It's funny because they didn't really improve the broadcast position with the new arena, did they?
No, horribly deteriorated from what we had at, whether you want to call it, Northlands Coliseum, Rexall Place, Sky Reach Center, the various names that they have had there. But there you hung right out over the ice, and Brett, I could see how things were going that night that Sergei Kostitsyn came to the bench a little early and created a nice odd man rush for the Oilers.
Well,
Peter Horacek almost killed him.
Yeah. He wasn't alone.
So, Pete, with during that first year, what was the most challenging thing about that first year broadcasting the Nashville Predators?
Well, the roster actually stayed pretty steady, so it wasn't difficult that way. And I'd have to say, all expectations were exceeded. 28 wins for an expansion team? I mean, that was absolutely fantastic. Now, it didn't help the team out necessarily with whom they got to draft because they didn't finish low enough in the standings to be able to get
that
top one or two pick.
Yeah.
The coaches were entirely responsible for that. You got it right, Brent. No question there. And I got to tell you, working with everybody was just so much fun. I know the players were grateful they got a full-time NHL shot rather than bouncing back and forth between the NHL and the American League or anything like that. So the challenges maybe were some of the questions we would get during the Hockey 101 course, which oftentimes we taught in what was then the Arena AV Theater upstairs on the bridge between the Predators' offices and the rink. And then some people seemed to forget that I was actually on the air, and they'd come up near our broadcast table and want to ask me questions right away. I was happy to answer them when we got off the air. But while on the air, that got to be a little bit difficult.
As one of those kids who remember standing up there in 310 waiting around to see, you know, when you guys would go off air, I appreciate that. So, Pete, you know, looking at your history with the Nashville Predators in those first few years, obviously the hockey from a Predators perspective was gritty at best and painful at worst. And I don't want to put it all on the coaches, but it definitely was mostly on them. But looking at this team... If you look, was there a certain team that when the Predators would come in and play that you got really fired up for to announce? Was it those early years? Was it the Red Wings to kind of see those amazing rosters? Like, who were the teams that you were like, can't wait to see how we match up against them?
Well, it was always Detroit to me. And I think the players felt the same way. And the coaches, Brent, don't you think, felt the very same way?
Until we beat them out in the playoffs, it was definitely the Red Wings for me.
Yeah, because you and Trotsky, I remember early the thing was, now guys, don't go out there asking for autographs.
We put out a young kid from Milwaukee, and then they'd throw out Fedorov and Yzerman and Stan Ann and on all the boys on the, it was just a tough situation for us. They had $74 million. And we had a $20 million, cap thing. There's no cap space back then. But it was just an interesting time. And when we beat them 9-0, or we beat them beat them in a playoff game, it was great for us that first year we got in the playoffs.
Pete, I want you to...
Yeah, and think about that night where they had the first ever win in Detroit.
Yep.
An overtime goal by Cliff Ronning against Manny Legacy. And Ronning simply centered the puck from like the right wing corner and banked it off Legacy for the win in overtime.
And you look at some of those Red Wing games. I mean, let's face it. I mean, the ice storm game in year one.
The night before the Christmas break, brief as it was then.
Yep,
that was incredible.
Yeah, talk about that one a little bit.
Yeah, because, well, number one, we're all coming into the office, and it was not easy navigating around Nashville. That day was December 23rd of 98, and the phones kept ringing. Are you guys going to cancel? That was the word to use, not postpone. Are you going to cancel the game tonight? Well, no, we aren't. The Red Wings are here in town. We're in town, and it's our obligation to put the game on. Well, still, more than 15,000 people made it out to that game, and I'll tell you, each and every one of those was very happy that they did, because the Preds came away with the victory. And then the other opponent of the Red Wings for the Cup Final the year before, the Washington Capitals, came in three nights later, and the Preds beat them too. So what a holiday weekend that was for Nashville Predators fans in year one.
You look at that, and that's one of the ones that always sticks out in my mind. That first win over the Red Wings, and let's face it, I mean, after the first time they came in and it was, you know, I'll be kind, 65% Red Wing fans.
I was about to say, I don't know if you can say most of the people who made it to the game were happy, because I think most of the people were in red that night probably.
No, but I think they were happy because they got to see their team.
Yeah, very
true. It was a competitive game.
Yeah, no question. But, I mean, and that's what I think really built that right there. I mean, you know, with using the derisive term Pred Wing fan, I mean, yeah. There was a, you know, that's one of the earliest memories of this franchise that I just look at, and just the absolute hatred of the Detroit Red Wings, and abusing anyone that would show up in our section that was dressed in red. That was something I brought with from Philly with me. Anyway, Pete, I want you to put on your thinking cap right now, because we're going to ask you a question in this next segment. Zach, Get Pete prepared so he knows how to answer this.
So, I mean, I'm actually going to pose this to Brent as well, you know, everyone around the horn. Excluding players who are currently playing for the Nashville Predators, if Nashville was to erect a Mount Rushmore of Predators on ice players, who would be on it?
All right, we're going to get those answers coming up next right here on Slapshot Radio, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Slapshot Radio, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Hey, real quick, I do want to tell you about Carter Church from White Cart Realtors, the Andrews Group. Let me tell you a little bit about Carter. Just a good man. I'm telling you, he knows his stuff. He's got marketing experience that you need to get your home sold quick in this market right now. It's a tough market. Let's face it. It's a tough time. But Carter will take care of you, and he'll take care of you at an appropriate distance. Call Carter today at 615-429-2044. That's 615-429-2044. Carter Church, your real estate professional if you're buying or if you're selling. So, the question got put here on Slapshot Radio with Zach McCann, Paul McCann, Brent Peterson, and the voice of the Nashville Predators, Pete Weber, joining us for the whole hour tonight. Who would be the four faces on the Predators, on your Predators Mount Rushmore? Pete, you get to go first. Hello, Pete.
Yes, sir.
There he is. Oh, okay. Pete, you get to go first. Who's on your Mount Rushmore of Nashville Predators players that are that are not currently on the team?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I somehow got disconnected. But I like to go with first thought, so I just jotted down four names very quickly. Thomas Vokoun, Paul Kariya, Shea Weber, Kimmo Timonen.
Ooh.
Yeah. I mean, that's hard. That's hard to beat right there, because he actually...
That's exactly the four that I picked. We must be psychic.
He went 3-for-4 on mine, too.
Three for four on mine as well. I mean, I've got Weber, Timonen, and Vokoun.
Ah. I had Weber, Vokoun, Kariya, David Legault.
And it's funny, my fourth one, I mean, I hard to disagree with any of these names we're talking about. And I kind of went the Korea direction, only the first one to really come in here. And I put Steve Sullivan there.
Also another name who floated through my brain as well.
So, I mean, you look at, I mean, Pete, obviously, I mean, Shea Weber, you look at, you know, first draft pick to really, you know, make an impact in the National Hockey League. And quite frankly, you could look at the first homegrown star of the Nashville Predators. Makes perfect sense. Thomas Vokoun, that, you know, and from a goaltending perspective, the first true star goaltender that the Predators have seen. chemo team, and then same thing. Now, Paul Kariya, why Paul Kariya on the Mount Rushmore?
Well, he is still the only player in team history to average a point a game over the course of his, unfortunately, too brief career, but that was when the team was put up for sale. So Paul Kariya, and then Paul Kariya wanted to come here. He had his agent, Don Baisley, after researching what came on when we came back from the lockout, he had Don Baisley contact David Poile and owner Craig Leopold and say, I want to come to Nashville. And I never forget, I was on a baseball field in Rochester, New York, in that July of 05, and my cell phone would not stop buzzing because that was the news that Paul Kariya decided he was coming to Nashville. And Paul Kariya showed a lot of youngsters how to play the game properly. And the impact he had on this team, and might have had there been the money to sign him after his second and unfortunately final year here, where he also came up with 76 points after 85 points. Guys, we're talking in the currency that rarely has any player put numbers like that on the board for the Predators.
And you look at and it's, again, very hard to disagree with that. And I think the only thing kept me from saying was only 2 years. But when you look at the impact that Paul Kariya had on this franchise, and I mean, to your point, Pete, you're on a baseball field hearing about that. Your phone's blowing up. I will never forget listening to Sports Talk Radio that afternoon being hosted from Titans training camp, and all they're talking about is hockey. I mean, that was, to me, almost that first inkling that maybe, just maybe, this town could really turn into a hockey town when that happened when Paul Kariya was signed.
And he didn't do it all by himself.
No.
But those two seasons he were here were the two best the Predators had and would have for a while.
And, I mean, you look at a good surrounding cast, good role players around that team, and honestly, if you really want to go here, a little bit of bad luck. I mean,
yes.
You know, you run into a San Jose Sharks team that just was...
Not once, but
yeah,
twice.
But twice. I mean, running into a San Jose Sharks team that was just, in some respects, on a mission. I mean, it was a little bit of a shame. So I'd like to ask Coach, though, your four is exactly the same. Out of curiosity, why Kimo Timonen on your Mount Rushmore, Coach?
Just he was such a classy guy, and he was a great for his size. He was a great defenseman, and I almost put Ryan Suter down, but I didn't want all the fans to boo me next time they saw me. So.
Wait a minute! But I hear him booing outside right now, Coach. I'm sorry.
Ryan Suter was—he was definitely a great player for us. But Weber and Kimo, and you're talking about Kariya so much. Kariya made us legitimate. He made the Nashville Predators the cool thing to do because he went and interviewed teams. Teams didn't interview him. He interviewed teams, and we ended up winning that race with him. And he ended up having a good line and a great 2 years for us. And like you said, we probably would have signed him if it hadn't been the time when Balsillie was around and that kind of thing, all that stuff happened. But I just thought that Thomas Okun for sure, Kariya, Weber, and Kimo Timonen. And Kimo Timonen was just a great person, a great player for us. He came, he was originally drafted by L.A., went back over to Finland to play, and we picked him up on the waiver draft, and that's how we – smart enough, smart coaches we were. We sent him down right away. How
right.
Smart are we, eh? We got him back within a month, and he was playing regular, and he had a great, great career for us.
Now,
and for himself.
Now, you guys were talking about the Kariya years. I think it can't be understated that another impact player who, had he been with this team for longer, just from sheer clout alone, would be on this list. What was it like when you got to watch Paul Kariya and Peter Forsberg play together?
Let's go back to that great overtime victory over Detroit.
I still remember that pass.
Well, and Peter is telling Crispy me in the postgame show, that was the sickest pass I've ever gotten.
I you know, and it's so funny. I like telling the story when it comes down to a Peter Forsberg. I don't think people realized the edge that he played with, how physical, how nasty his game really was.
Oh, yeah. Brent, we all joke that he looked, I think he was really born in Winnipeg, right?
Yeah, he was just a great all-around player, but he was tough as nails, boy. He didn't fight you, but, boy, he'd hit you, and he'd take hits, and guys would run at him, but he was a tough, tough player, boy, and he knew how to win. We got him that year, and we were, I'm telling you, he gave a speech before one of the first games against San Jose. He gave a speech, and I'm telling you, I was ready to go out and play that night.
You know, Coach, here's the thing, and the thing, that was my first year as the public address announcer when Forsberg came here. Thank you. Anyway, no. But what's interesting is this. I never realized how hard of a hitter he was because he had he just zero windup. I mean, it was just – and this happened right in front of the penalty box, right to my right. It couldn't have been more than 4 minutes into game one against the San Jose Sharks. Forsberg had had Patty Marleau up against the boards, and he couldn't have had more than 9 inches between him and Marleau, and Marleau ended up in the second row. And, I mean, I've never seen somebody hit that hard with absolutely no windup.
And he was injured then too. He was injured badly, and he played still played, but. Yeah, I just watched the finals between the Florida Panthers and the Colorado Avalanche.
Oh, yeah.
And, man, he was unbelievable. He was so tough and so hard and hard to play against. He got shots on goal in that tight-checking team that Florida had, plus they had Van Beesbrook in goal. And Forsberg just dominated everybody. It was so good.
Well, and, Brent, we were in Toronto the night that Peter was inducted to the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Right,
and
yeah.
He was just beaming from ear to ear, that smile of his. And remember what he asked us about Philip Forsberg?
His little brother, right?
Well, so he's, you know why related, he tells us, you know why he's good, right, Brent?
Why?
He's Swedish. That's all he said. And then his big grin. Right.
Peter, we've got about 45 seconds left. I want to ask you, if I'm to ask you right now, name your favorite memory of your time in Nashville. What is it?
Realizing at the end of Game 6 against Anaheim that the Predators were going to the Stanley Cup Final.
Yeah, well, that's
right at all.
Amen. Amen to there. Although I think was I think Brent's was still ringing in your ear, wasn't it?
That was crispy.
Well, it was, but that's because Crispy squeezed him so hard.
Oh, Peter, thank you so much for taking this hour and joining us tonight. We certainly appreciate it. Please give our love.
Fly by. Thank you.
Indeed. Give our love to Claudia. Give our love to Max. Give him a little scratch behind the ears for us, and we'll be talking to you soon, okay?
Okay. Thank you.
The voice of the Predators, Pete Weber, on Slapshot Radio. Nice to put that back together again, the co-host of this show for 8 years. Coach Zach, well, you've wasted another hour here on Slapshot Radio. Next week, the president himself will be joining us. Sean Henry joining us on Slapshot Radio next week. So make sure you tune in 7 p.m. right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Thanks for joining us. A big thank you to our guests, the voice of the Predators, Pete Weber, and, of course, our sponsors, Hermitage Family and Cosmetic Dentistry, Carter Church from Weikart Realtors, The Andrews Group, your real estate agent in Murfreesboro, Cool Springs Wines and Spirits on Moores Lane in Cool Springs with curbside delivery, and Lazy Boy Furniture Gallery. Shop online at lazyboy.com with 3 locally owned Middle Tennessee locations. When you talk to one of our sponsors, make sure you tell them you heard about them on Slapshot Radio and thank them for their support. For our producer, the Mighty Max, our co-hosts, Brent Peterson and Zach McCann, I'm Paul McCann saying good night and good hockey.